science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
We live in a society exquisitely dependent on science and technology, in which hardly anyone knows anything about science and technology. Carl Sagan.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, a place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week, I want to talk about that statement by Carl and really unpick that paradox that there is about our understanding and our dependency on science and technology. So, obviously, if you listen to the podcast episode that I did last week about Carl Sagan and some of the statements that he's made and the contributions he's made, the massive contributions he made to bringing science to the masses and in terms of delivering with some fantastic space exploration projects, all kinds of different scientific endeavors owe a lot to Carl Sagan's vision and energy and just his sheer belief that the wonders that science can start to create for us, we need to be able to understand them. But he was also, at the same time, a deep thinker and philosopher, and he really did understand that we were getting this gap that was starting to open up between our dependency on science and technology and our understanding of how it all works. And this is the danger. He felt there was a danger in that. And over the decade or so since his passing, that gap has got even wider. And so I want to discuss some reasons for that, but I also want to discuss some ways that we can try to narrow that gap and make it so that the general populace do start to understand, or does start to understand, why it's important that we do at least try to get a basic or fundamental understanding of how each piece of this new slice of technological heaven actually works. So, for example, how many of us depend on our smartphones and on the internet, and yet how many of us actually understand how any of it works? And especially, for example, even just data transmission, encryption, basic coding, GPS technology, which tracks our every move and is then used by advertisers to target us, which is, I think, it's just, you know, one of those kind of areas where corporations that are building this technology and delivering this technology into our hands are taking full advantage of, and yet so few of us know anything about how it all works and understand even that we are being taken advantage of. But trust me, we are. And it's really important, I think, therefore, that we understand that there are some consequences of this paradox. So we have a vulnerability to misinformation. We've seen that with so many different aspects of political life, in particular recently, both across the pond in America, but also here in the UK and in other countries, where people have been able to actually spread misinformation very, very quickly and very, very easily. And that it basically gives us, as a general populace, an inability to participate in informed decision making, because both personally and collectively we are not aware that we are being manipulated. There's a real risk of societal dependence turning into a techno-blindness, where we just become, in fact we already have become to a certain extent, passive consumers rather than informed participants in technological discourse. And it's really important, therefore, that we bridge this gap between the dependency and the understanding by promoting science literacy as a means of empowerment, which in turn will enable individuals to navigate and contribute to an increasingly complex world. And sometimes you have to ask the question, does it have to be this complex, or is it a complexity that's built to hide things? And I think we're in danger of allowing that to happen. So if we just have a quick look at some of the major scientific and technological advances, even in just the last 2.5 decades. You've got the massive rise of internet and mobile connectivity. And there's a Doctor Who episode where everyone is so dependent on their phones and they've got their headphones plugged in. And then a alien force decides to take control of humanity by actually hacking those phones so that they can take complete control over the human brain just by the fact that we've become so dependent on that device plugged into our ears and we can't do without it. It's just frightening, really, when you look about how you walk down the street and you see people just walking across roads looking at their phone. No awareness of anything around them at all. We've got the advances in medical technology and telemedicine, which are really rapidly advancing now. We've discussed that in the previous episode of ThinkWorks. You've got breakthroughs in artificial intelligence and machine learning. We've got renewable energy technologies and their growth, and now a resistance against that growth as well. And we've got the evolution of space exploration, including private space flight, where corporations are actually taking the flag to space. And you have to wonder why there are massive resources up there. We've almost strip mined the Earth clean, but there are massive resources in space. And we have to understand that these corporations are not, they're not doing it for the good of everyone. They're doing it for the good of themselves. And that's just a quick run through just some of the ways that we've advanced even in just the last 2.5 decades. But what's frightening is, so for example, a 2023 survey conducted by the Pew Research Center found that only about 30% of Americans could correctly interpret scientific concepts related to genetics or even correctly define basic scientific terms like antibody or ecosystem. And I will guarantee you this is the same ratio that would be across the world. I'm not targeting Americans specifically, it's just that there's been a lot of work done there to try and understand about this lack of understanding of where we're going scientifically and technologically speaking. So I think that's an important statistic for us to all bear in mind. Likewise, a 2022 report by the National Center for Science and Engineering in America indicated that only 20% of respondents could convincingly explain how algorithms, and this is just unbelievable, how the algorithms influence social media feeds, despite the profound impact of these technologies on daily digital interactions and, crucially, how people think and feel about certain types of subjects. And when it comes to renewable energy, nearly 40% of global participants overestimated the cost of renewable energy, indicating a real lack of awareness about recent advancements in solar and wind technology and how it's become so affordable now. And it's cheaper to produce energy using these means than it is on the traditional fossil fuels that we're still ramping up around the world. Now, there are lots of factors that contribute to the gap between understanding and dependency. And a lot of it is down to our education curriculums, and this is across the Western world, probably across the world, full stop. Many educational systems are really slow to incorporate current scientific and technological topics, and this leaves students with outdated or insufficient knowledge. And then it becomes harder then to play catch up when you're out there in the real world. Media representation, which is always tied into vested interests these days, especially in America and Britain, has this kind of sensationalism in media coverage, and it often oversimplifies or distorts scientific facts, and these again contribute to misconceptions. You've got the whole complexity and accessibility of information, so the rapid pace of these technological developments make it really challenging for the average person to stay informed. And sad to say, scientists still haven't learned the lesson of the likes of Carl Sagan and Brian Greene and Brian Cox here in the UK about, we've got to present science papers in a way that aren't just written for our peers. They have to be written for everybody so that the man in the street, the woman in the street can keep up with these technological and scientific developments so that we can have an input. And sometimes I feel like the scientists almost want to act inside a closed community that makes it hard for people from the outside to look in and say, ooh, should you really be doing that? There's an element of that in this, I think, and it's time that scientists were brought to task. Yes, do your scientific papers, but make sure you also have a briefing that goes with that paper for the layperson to be able to pick up and at least understand the basics of what it is you've achieved or you're trying to do. Now, the gap between dependency and understanding, it manifests itself in lots of different ways. So, for example, in decision making, a lack of understanding leads to poor decision making at individual, community and governmental levels even. So, for example, misunderstanding the basics of climate science influences public opinion against much needed environmental policies. How many times do you see something like there's been a massive snowstorm just come from somewhere out of nowhere, and then a politician who's got his vested or her vested interests in a oil company will suddenly appear and say, "Oh, and I thought they said it was going to be global warming. Well, it's snowing." And you just look at these people and you just think, how stupid are you? Now, we could argue about the fact that we should never have called it global warming in the first place. We should have called it environmental and climate change right from the start, because it gives people that ability to just go right to as a very simple misunderstanding that becomes very popular and an excuse for people to continue to behave in a way that isn't really taking responsibility for the impact that we're having on our climate. So you've got all that in there. So we need to be careful about that. Misinformation can also foster fear or resistance to beneficial technologies. So genetically modified organisms, for example, in agriculture, or vaccine hesitancy, these resulted in missed opportunities for improvement and innovation. So some of these statistics that I've just mentioned there highlight the significance of this awareness gap and its potential implications. We need to really address these gaps to foster a more informed and, crucially, proactive society. We've got to stop being passively done to, you know, and told that, oh yes, we've got this fantastic new piece of technology, you're going to love it. No, we need to say, well, why do I need this piece of technology? What does it cost? What will it cost? How will it work? What will it do for me? But what will it do for you while I'm actually believing it's doing some potential good for me? All these kind of questions are not asked. We just go blindly into the shops and buy the latest piece of technology because we're being told to buy it. There's something really wrong there, and we need to start to unpick the reasons behind some of these technology developments. For example, recent Windows updates. I don't know if you've noticed, but Microsoft are desperately trying to move everyone onto Windows 11, but you need a particularly high-spec computer. So recent Windows 10 updates have tended to be about how you can get Windows 11, but also pushing a Microsoft agenda, news and interests that you're not interested in suddenly become to the fore. Their technology, their browser is reinstalled, and they try to make it the default browser. So we have to be aware that these technology companies have all got their own agenda. It's not just Microsoft. I'm just picking them out as an example right now. But the fact is they're all pushing their own agenda, and we need to be aware of that, and we need to be aware of why they're doing it. And then we can start to ask the questions about, do I need this piece of technology or not? I think the biggest issue and the biggest potential consequence of not understanding why technology is or what it is capable of doing is really this spread of misinformation. Social media influences become global, massive, and it's all based on algorithms that people don't understand. So the algorithms, because these social media giants make their money from advertising, the algorithms prioritize sensational content over factual accuracy. So the more sensationalist a claim may be, and the more viral that gets pushed, the more hits it gets, the more revenue the social media giant will get. And this leads to widespread public misconceptions, and it really did, and it has damaged, like, the vaccines, not just the COVID vaccines, but the MMR here in the UK, which led to lots of unnecessary baby deaths. We've had the climate change debate, which has shifted away from, oh, it's all a con, because we've allowed the algorithms to start to say, oh yeah, but you know, this storm would have happened like 100 years ago anyway. They pick out individual episodes and say, well, we had a storm worse than this 300 years ago. Yeah, but we're having those storms every month now, not every 100 years. And this is what we have to start to actually question. Where is this information coming from? Why is it? And that is the crucial one. Why is this information in my feed that's going to make you click on it? It's because when you do, people get money. That's it. End of story. So often factual accuracy is lost in the search for the almighty dollar. That has potential damage across many different areas as well. The COVID-19 pandemic, misinformation about the viruses and vaccines really held up a lot of the rollout in a lot of countries. You know, this whole idea that Microsoft would chip in everybody using the vaccine really took hold in a lot of people's psyche. And now, I am not Microsoft's biggest fan by any stretch of the imagination. Regular listeners will know that I often have a rant about that particular company. But they are not, even they are not capable of chipping everybody through a vaccine and creating a false scare about a pandemic that they decided, oh yeah, we'll just create this fear and then everyone will go and get this vaccine and we can chip them and then we can send them all our advertisers and track them and everything else. They don't need to chip us. They've got, you know, 95% of the world's computers, apparently, or something stupid. And it's already there. They're already doing it. They don't need to actually have us chipped. But it did become a real belief. There's also public resistance caused to really beneficial technology. Now, yes, genetically modified organisms could be really vital in terms of food security and abundance, but vested interests have created a fear of them becoming this grey goo, or, you know, that they are going to destroy health systems and so on. But the fact is that so long as this technology is carefully monitored, carefully used, there is no real risk to humanity. But again, we've held the rollout of these technologies, and then look what happened. A war suddenly hit grain and wheat, which meant that we couldn't get breads and basic foodstuffs, and prices went up. But not only that, people started to starve. And that's all down to the fact that we could have had genetically modified wheat growing in other countries. That meant when Ukraine came under attack and those supplies of wheat were halted from a natural base, we didn't have anything to replace them. So we have to think about the consequences of why we allow this misinformation to spread and how it spreads. And another big area which everyone will know about is this rise of AI. Now, a lot of people are just accepting that all these AI apps are out there and, oh yes, it's got the latest AI. The fact is, most of what is being presented to us as an AI is not truly AI. It's a marketing ploy so that it convinces you that this is a really great latest leading edge game or technology or piece of software that's going to enhance your business. We have to be careful because we need to understand what AI truly is and what benefits it could potentially deliver, but also some of the downsides. I mean, again, you've got the people battling AI that spread the Skynet myth, and then you've got people who are just claiming that their latest game is completely AI-based, and you've got somewhere in the middle which says, well, actually, I've got a really good solution here that AI is going to be the core of, and it will benefit us because it'll be able to scan these x-rays much quicker than humans can and find if there's any abnormalities. But the fact is that we are holding off rolling out particular AIs that could benefit us because everyone's racing to get commercial AIs out there to make a lot of money, and they're not AIs. And this is it, but we don't understand that difference, and this is the real crucial thing here. So by looking at some of these negative impacts, I think you can see why it's crucial to address this knowledge gap and understand that risk can motivate individuals and policymakers to take uninformed actions towards rolling out any piece of technology, whether it's for or against. So we need to look at the benefits now of closing the gap, because there are several. If we properly understand what these risks are, we can hopefully motivate ourselves as individuals, but also motivate policymakers to take more informed action towards bridging the divide between dependency and understanding. And these benefits, we've got lots of positive outcomes. So for example, it leads to, if you understand how and why a piece of technology is, or what a particular scientific advantage advancement can possibly mean, either in a commercial, societal, or purely scientific basis. It means we can have enhanced decision-making abilities, because if we are informed as individuals and communities and understand that this science and technology that affects our lives is here for a particular reason, then individuals can make better personal and professional decisions. And this knowledge allows people to critically evaluate information, which is critically important, and it leads to a healthier lifestyle, smarter consumer choices, more informed civic participation, and it gives us more of an oversight about what is going on behind closed doors with these scientific and technological advances. We can also have policy influence, so an informed public can exert positive pressure on policymakers to create legislation that reflects scientific realities, and this leads to laws that protect the environment, enhance public health, promotes innovation, helps businesses grow that and become more productive, that critical word that everyone seems to be focused on at the moment. And we're not doing that at the moment. We're actually putting barriers up because we're making things so complex, we're being done to rather than doing. If we have a better understanding of emerging technologies and scientific principles, then society is better equipped to adapt to and manage future challenges, such as a future pandemic or a technological disruption or climate change, the effect of climate change. The technological disruptions is a really critical one, because the sun can give off massive solar flares, and solar flares can act as an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, which disrupts the ability of anything electrical to work. So everything could just suddenly shut down in a particular part of the earth, or even earthwide, if we actually are unlucky enough to get hit by a big enough solar storm. Just think about that. Suddenly we are plunged into darkness, we are plunged into no connectivity, we are plunged into cars just stopping from working, and planes will fall from the sky. Because we're not planning for these kind of events, we are not going to be ready should it happen. And we're only, I think a study showed that we're only ever 5 square meals away from anarchy. So think about that. If we suddenly lose power, and it won't be just for days, it'll be for months, because all circuitry that is active will actually be disrupted by such an event. So yes, if you've got a car that's switched off and you've got your computer switched off when it particularly happens, then that might still work, but you're still going to lose power. You're still going to lose the connectivity. All these things we need to think about and consider. So if we have a knowledgeable society, we can actually implement early warning systems. We can have emergency response plans that are not just national but local. And we can foster community resilience through this education and resource distribution. So we have a plan. We know where the plan is. We know who's in control of that plan should these kind of disruptions occur. And the upside of all this is you can have increased public trust and participation in technological advances. And I don't understand why a lot of corporations and closed-door societies, scientific societies, don't understand this, that if you actually have people on your side because they understand, then they are more likely to be able to support you as you go forward with your developments. We have got this cynicism building in society where everything we are told now is starting to become mistrusted. So the corporations that are allowing the misinformation to occur are eventually going to find themselves on the receiving end of a bite back. It just staggers belief that there is no understanding of this. If we build confidence, we have transparency and understanding that fosters this trust between scientific community and the public, and people can grasp how technologies work and what their benefits are going to be, they are more likely to support and engage with new innovations. And citizens science, which I think is a great term, is all about encouraging public participation in scientific research through citizen science projects. And this can lead to discoveries and innovations themselves driven by community involvement, because often communities, people's minds without a kind of locked into the scientific way of working, can ask a question that a scientist might not actually be able to consider on their own. So suddenly this question comes in, which is why a lot of scientific groups now are working, they have a philosopher on the team to help them develop their thinking for when they go about setting a particular project. So we need to actually understand that. And I think this citizen science thing is an idea that I'm going to come back to in a future episode of ThinkWorks and see how we can incorporate that into some of the other stuff that I'm doing on my Darren Informed platform. Closing that gap between understanding the dependency can also lead to economic growth. So we can empower entrepreneurs and innovators alike. So by identifying those unmet needs and potential solutions, so individuals equipped with scientific and technological knowledge are more likely to be able to contribute to economic growth by joining in with some entrepreneurs or even becoming entrepreneurs themselves because they have an idea of something that they want to deliver and based on their understanding of a new technology. Workforce development. As industries involve an educated workforce is essential for filling new jobs and driving economic development. And knowledge is going to be key here because most of us don't really understand how AI works. We don't understand renewable energy and biotechnology. And yet these are crucial for maintaining competitiveness in a global market, and we're not bringing enough people through to be able to contribute to that path of economic development. And lastly, we can have improved quality of life. If we understand how we can use accurate information about health and technology, we can have better outcomes in public and personal health because we can improve living conditions, we can use the technology to bring about new ways of addressing socioeconomic issues, close the deprived areas, get into those and really start to narrow the gap there. And we can have environmental sustainability, so we can understand all about environmental science and technology, encouraging, therefore, sustainable practices that preserve natural resources and reduce human impact on the planet without it becoming a political hot potato. So, I've talked about the reasons why we have this gap, I've talked about the downsides of the gap, and I've talked about some of the potential benefits of closing the gap. But how do we do it? So we got some strategies, some quick actionable steps, I think, that we need to go through. The first and clearly critical one to me is education reform. We need to have education reform. So we need to integrate science and technology into curriculums. We need to advocate that curricula include up-to-date science and technology topics beginning at an early age. Subjects like coding, data literacy, environmental science, these should all be core components of education. I'll give you an anecdote here. I once was asked to step in to help to cover for 3 months for a unit that was dealing with, shall we call them problem children? They were problem teenagers. They were the kind of students that a lot of schools didn't want, and they ended up in this particular unit. And I'd done some work with the particular college, some other fields, and they said, look, you know, you're a qualified teacher. We've got someone coming to work in this unit, but he can't come and join us for 3 months because of his existing contract. Will you cover? And I said, yeah, no problem. But when I got there, I found that we were constrained to these particular types of workbooks and what had to be done. And a workbook that would take, say, a normal class, maybe a lesson to do, was taking 3 or 4 sessions. It was hard work. It was massive disruption. It was really difficult. It's more about control, I think, than actually helping to enable these children, these teenagers, to learn. And then one day I walked in, and they were really excited. And as I walked in, they said, sir, sir. And they never called me sir in the 3 months I've been there. Is it true that you're an alien hunter? And I was kind of, what, eh? And then they said, yeah, so-and-so was here just before you got here. And he said he went to one of your talks last week. And I went, oh. I said, no. I said, what I do is I look, I do believe that there is the potential for life out there in the universe, and there are ways that we can go about it. And I also debunk certain theories about alien visitation here on Earth. Oh, can we do that? Can we do that? And I went, look, I said, here's the deal, guys. If we finish this workbook today, I will go through a very quick rundown of the talk and answer any questions that you've got about that field, about aliens and this island Earth and et cetera, et cetera. They did the workbook in half an hour because they had a reason to learn. And then for the remaining 45 minutes of that lesson, they were so engaged because they were formulating arguments, they were asking correct questions, they were all really focused. We did research on the internet, everything. It was just fantastic. And that's what education has lost and forgotten. We're not here to tell people what to learn. We're here to actually help people have a love of learning. It's a trick, but it's a trick that is necessary. And so we need to be able to bring science into the classroom in a way that engages young minds and gets them so that they're not locked into just learn the basics, blah, 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 and, you know, pass a test because we're going to ask you questions only on that particular narrow field. We need to encourage that love of learning, but that we should still have some core sessions in that. We can have professional development for educators so that, you know, we can provide continuous training and resources for teachers to stay updated on the latest scientific and technological advances. Not just teachers, doctors, GPs, just everyone should be constantly given this fascination with wanting to know more and more about the technology and the science that they are using. And the more that we can keep these professionals educated, the better they will be at working with communities and individuals. We have to have public lectures and science festivals that really capture the imagination so that the science festivals are not for scientists. They're for us. They're for the person in the street, and they engage us in such a way that we want to go to these things to see these latest advances and understand them. And if we make these exhibits and conferences and festivals fun, and we get people engaged and we make everything accessible, the more beneficial it will be for us in the long run. And certainly the citizen science idea that I discovered while I was doing the research for this episode is something that I'm definitely going to embrace and bring back and put them into the science talks that and lectures that I used to do, which I want to bring back in the next year. And I'm going to actually look to see if there's any projects here in the UK that I can bring into this movement. The more we do that, the more beneficial it will be. We also need to improve communication and transparency from scientific communities, and we need open access publications. Every scientific paper that is published should have a public open access version that we can also know about and read. So we need to advocate for open access scientific publications, which just give us free access to research findings. It makes cutting-edge science readily available to everyone, and simplified reports and summaries will encourage the creation of scientific reports and papers aimed at the general public and the media to demystify complex data and findings. And I've already touched upon this, but it's a real mission of mine, is we need to encourage curiosity and lifelong learning. There is no such thing as a stupid question, and we need to actually put that message out there first and foremost so we get people asking questions. And we need to promote the use of online platforms like mastermind.com, for example, which offer courses on a variety of scientific and technological topics, allowing individuals to learn at their own pace online, but we're learning about how this all works or what the latest advances are. And there are many such sites and kinds of masterminds, if you want to give them a name, where like-minded people are coming together. And I want to do that as well in terms of developing this citizen science project. I think there's something in that I think is going to become a big project for me next year. We need local science clubs and maker spaces, so we support the development of community clubs where individuals can experiment and learn from peers and work on science and technological projects in an informal setting, i.e. we make it fun. And finally, we need to encourage collaboration between technology companies and educators. So tech industry partnerships are really crucial here, so we can have schools and technological companies providing resources and internships and apprentices and real world learning opportunities for students with guest lecturer programs. We need to initiate guest lectures by professionals from the tech industry to share insights and offer mentorship to students and educators alike. And it's really important that we don't forget the educator in all this, the teacher, the professor, because we need to make sure that as fast as the student and the individual community groups are learning and keeping on top of all these advances, the educators are keeping a pace with it as well. So So those strategies and activities provide a framework, I think, for some actionable steps. And one of the projects that I'm going to pick up from this is definitely the idea of citizen science. So please start to watch out on my website for news about this. It will become a project, I think, in the new year. So if you go to darreninform.com, that's my website. We've got ThinkWorks podcast, obviously. We've got ThinkWorks forum, which is where I do posts around some of the subjects that we've discussed and the podcast, but also other items as well. And I've got a blog, ThinkWorks blog, where I do writings on various different topics connected to business, science, and learning. And what I want to do, I think, is I'll bridge those three different groups into a citizen science project. So come and keep watching out for news on that. And also, don't forget, you can go to the ThinkWorks forum, which is darreninform.com/ThinkWorks forum. There'll be a post connected to this episode in which you can add your own thoughts and comments. And if you want to join me in defining what a citizen science project is going to look like, then please do. And we can have a conversation and then hopefully move this idea forward. I just think that's such a great idea. But I hope what I've really got across in this episode is that we need to implement these activities of steps to bridge the knowledge gap in science and technology, because we need to foster that environment where public understanding keeps pace with innovation, and public, individuals, society, community groups all benefit as a whole from being able to do rather than being done to, which is where we're at the moment. Come and join me next week for another episode of ThinkWorks. Come and join me in the ThinkWorks forum. And also read my ThinkWorks blog as well. So all those are at darreninform.com/, and then it's ThinkWorks forum, ThinkWorks blog, and ThinkWorks podcast, obviously, for past episodes, including the one that I did last week on Carl Sagan himself, who gave us this brilliant quote to get my mind thinking about this week's episode. Thanks very much for your ears, folks. Please take care. It's a crazy world out there. But above all else, if I convinced you of nothing else, never stop asking questions. Talk to you soon.
Like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for @DarrenInform for news, tips, and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson, and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.